Welcome in, everybody. It is the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth in the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Alongside Ian Safar, who's behind the glass this morning. A rare morning appearance for Ian Safar.
A little bit of a
schedule change to accommodate something big that you have going on this weekend.
I sure do. Yes, we are getting married on Sunday.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
To you and Nicole.
It'll be fun. Something small, you know, but it'll be nice.
Yes, it will be, and very happy for y'all and May as well. Thank you.
It'll be cool.
To start that chapter in your lives. That is not the special programming announcement that we've been teasing this morning on social media and throughout Go Look and Wingo. Starting Monday, we are excited to announce the return of a live morning show from 6 to 10 a.m. Yes, starting Monday, July 27th. We look forward to once again having live and local discussion during your mornings, whether you're driving to work, or just waking up and turning on the app or your smart speaker at home. So on Morning Drive, you'll hear some familiar voices once again, most notably Robbie Stanley of NHL.com. And Joe Rexroad of The Athletic, two individuals that have put in a lot of time with us here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. They are not strangers to these airwaves. So looking forward to having that morning show starting up again. They'll be talking Preds and Titans and NFL and college football, everything else going on in this wacky world of sports that we're living in right now. So once again, that is starting Monday, July 27th. That is just on the other side of this coming weekend. So with that, today is the final edition of the Rundown from 9 to 10 a.m. I know Chase McCabe, Marquise Munson, and myself have enjoyed bringing you that extra hour of live coverage every weekday for the last few months. During quarantine, we've had a lot of fun talking Titans and NFL draft and the NHL's return to play and all sorts of maybe non-sports topics as well through the quarantine period. But time to get back to a live morning show from 6 to 10 a.m. And once again, that is starting on Monday with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad. So that is your special programming announcement here on 102.5 The Game. And last night on 102.5 The Game, the New York Yankees beat the Washington Nationals 4-1 in the first game of the 2020 MLB season. Giancarlo Stanton started strong for the New York Yankees. Sorry, Ian Safar behind the glass, who is a New York Mets fan. But the Yankees getting a win last night, 4-1. Finishing after six innings due to rain, huge storm blowing through D.C.
I kind of had forgotten there was Last Sports on. So I was like, oh, yeah, there's the game on. Let me go check the score, see how it's going on.
So what'd you think?
And then I saw a rain delay, and I was like, oh good. Okay. Glad baseball's back.
So then you don't have the perspective of actually watching it.
Yeah, so I watched it a little bit here, and then I turned it back on. I was like, oh, it's a rain delay. I was like, oh, thank God baseball's back. So it was typical.
So here would be... Here would be my first reaction to a live sporting event within the four major sports without fans and with no crowd noise pumped in either. Is that when you're watching it and you're focused on the actual play going on, you don't really notice it. At least that was my reaction to that. You don't really notice that there's not fans. You know it's the elephant in the room, but if you're watching and you're focused on it, you're good. But with attention spans in 2020 being so much smaller and shorter than they were back in 2000, like if you get distracted and, you know, you start looking at your phone or have, let's say, in my case, my wife talking to me, and we start talking about the new house and everything, then it's not as easy to draw me back in because there's not that pizzazz going on the screen with.
I was gonna say, yeah, it was just it's a little flat.
It's flat. It is absolutely flat. We would absolutely take this over the alternative of not having baseball or live sports right now.
True,
but flat is a good word to it. It's like that Coca-Cola that's been sitting in the fridge for like a year, and you open it up, and the first taste is like, man, that doesn't really taste like Coke. But then you keep drinking it, and then you realize it's Coke, you know? Like, it's flat for Major League Baseball. But the more you watch it, like, I'm going to be watching the Reds, obviously, tonight. Like, the more you watch it, the more you're going to be into it. Especially as these games go along, and with each passing game, the more important they become.
Yeah, I could see that. But it did. It seemed like, you know, without the crowd, and it was like, it was just hard to tell how much the players were into it with everything. And without the energy, I don't know. There's probably another word other than flat, but, you know, it just seemed, like you said, it did lack a little pizzazz.
Speaking of flat, Dr. Fauci's first pitch.
Well, yeah, he's done a lot, you know, working hard. But, man, at least he hasn't had a lot of time to work on his throwing motion, I would say. But it could use a little work.
I mean, talk about flattening the curve ball with that first pitch. I mean, it was it goes up there with a lot of the other with 50 Cent years ago. I mean, 50 Cent, that's the only thing that 50 Cent and Dr. Fauci have in common is terrible first pitches to open a baseball game. So last night, Yankees win, Dodgers win. My bold prediction yesterday of taking the field over the Dodgers and the Yankees not starting off really well. Those two teams winning by a combined score of 12-2 on opening night. Not loving that prediction, but we'll see. Also, yesterday, Major League Baseball throwing us a curveball with the postseason format. We started hearing whispers of this, I believe it was Wednesday night, of an expanded postseason from 10 to 16 teams. And on the day in which the first pitch was thrown, they changed the postseason format. How about that? They just completely changed the format. Not only are they going from 10 to 16 teams, which in itself, now you have more than 50% of baseball teams making the playoffs, where back in the day, I mean, you were lucky to even make it to the LCS, whether it's the ALCS or the NLCS. And now they're allowing 16 teams in. Hopefully this is just a one-year thing and not the opening of a can of worms where every
surely
year becomes
not.
16.
Yeah, no. Surely. No way.
Surely. But I will say, if this becomes a smashing success, who the hell knows with Major League Baseball? But the thing that really drives me bonkers about this postseason format is that teams will be able to pick their first round opponent. What is this? The Sandlot?
Where, I mean, that's like got to be unheard of, right?
So I've seen Greg Wyshynski really ask for this in the NHL on ESPN.com when it comes to the NHL's playoff format. You know, the Stanley Cup playoff format, a lot of people think it is what it is. They don't love it. Some people want it to go back to just seeding 1 through 8. In each conference and be done with it and not deal with the divisional format. And then you have 2 wild cards and the top seed faces the second wild card and blah, blah, blah. So Greg Wyshynski has had this idea at ESPN.com the last handful of years of the top seeds in each conference picking their opponent, which adds all sorts of drama to a playoff format that already has drama. And I thought it was just a tongue-in-cheek idea of, let's try this. You know what? It sounds fun. This feels like it's, you know, fantasy land, Little League, like you're playing out at the Sandlot with Benny the Jet Rodriguez and Smalls and Hamilton Porter. And now it's becoming real life. There is going to be a quote selection show after the regular season where the top seeds in the American League and the National League both pick their playoff opponents for the first round. And then it's like a college baseball super regional where it's a best of 3 in the first round, all 3 games played in the top seeds home city. So not only is it a 60-game regular season like college baseball, but we're getting a super regional to start the MLB postseason.
How are you going to go about deciding who you want to play?
I mean, what are the
biggest factors in that? I guess pitching?
So Jared Stillman yesterday with Joe Rexrode brought up a fabulous point. The LA Dodgers could win 45 games out of 60. They easily, maybe not easily, but realistically, they could win 45 games out of 60 and go 45-15. And then they are faced with the prospect of potentially having to face a team with a strong ace and go down one zip in a best of three and be facing elimination after one playoff game, which is better than just single elimination where it's just one game. But if you're the LA Dodgers, you're going with the rotation that is the weakest, right? I mean,
you would think.
Let's say
that makes the most sense for sure.
Let's say the 8 seed going into or at the end of the regular season is the New York Mets. Let's use Jared's example yesterday. And the LA Dodgers could also go with the 7 seed, the Milwaukee Brewers. They're going with the Brewers over the Dodgers because the Brewers don't have Jacob DeGrom or Noah Syndergaard. But then you're adding bulletin board material for the Milwaukee Brewers, saying that, okay, of all the teams that you had to pick from, you're picking us to play. So, it could be a huge success for baseball. I just don't know what the motivation was to wait until the 11th hour.
Maybe because they knew everybody would hate it.
Maybe.
I don't know.
It's a complete money grab. A complete money grab to get all of these extra playoff games on ESPN and TBS, which all of these extra games are being played on ESPN and TBS come October.
And at this point, they could use any extra revenue they can get. So
exactly. And we're going to see that within stadiums. I mean, teams are going to be doing this as well. In the Yankees-Mets summer camp game over the weekend, instead of having the New York Mets logo on the mound, it was a Ford logo on the mound right behind the rubber. So all these teams, they're going to be putting tarps in empty sections with advertisements. I mean, get used to it with sports right now. So definitely interesting from Major League Baseball to expand their postseason on opening day. Also, it is so Major League Baseball in 2020 to do such a thing. Coming up next, the Seattle NHL franchise has a name, and I think a lot of people are curious about why they picked this name. Plus, another professional sports team changed their name yesterday as well. We'll get to all of that coming up next here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Part owner Andy Jassy told me that they looked at more than 1,200 names and seriously considered more than 100 of them. One of those was the Metropolitans, which is actually the original name of the pro franchise that played in Seattle and won a Stanley Cup in 1917. But that name was nixed when Commissioner Gary Bettman showed some reticence because the NHL already has a Metropolitan division.
That was Emily Kaplan of ESPN.com yesterday on Seattle's choice of name for the 32nd franchise in the National Hockey League. And the Seattle NHL franchise, or maybe let's call them the Seattle hockey team, like the Washington football team instead of the Washington Redskins, they opted to release everything yesterday. The team name and the jerseys and the logo, everything yesterday. At their new arena that is currently being built called Climate Pledge Arena. And they decided to go with the Seattle Kraken as their new team name. The 32nd franchise in the National Hockey League will be the Seattle Kraken. Their colors are navy. I believe they're calling it icy blue and just a little bit of red within it as well.
I think I saw like a deep sea blue in there too.
Yeah. So it definitely has that Seattle feel to it. When you look at the Seahawks and the Mariners, they're going with that same theme, that same color scheme as those teams. Maybe not as much green. It's definitely not the neon green of the Seattle Seahawks, but the Seattle Kraken. And I got upwards of a dozen texts yesterday, all day long, of what the hell is a Kraken? And why did Seattle go with Kraken as their team name? What is this, arena football? That was a lot of the text messages that I got yesterday. So if you're wondering what the hell is a Kraken, just like I got many texts yesterday asking me what is a Kraken, it is a legendary sea monster. It's a mythical creature within the ocean. And obviously in the Pacific Northwest, that is a huge part of their livelihood, the ocean and the sea. And they go with a really fascinating name over your cliche team name. You know, I know another one, Emily Kaplan there mentioned the Metropolitans. Don't know if I would have liked that name going after the old Seattle teams. Also, why would you name your team the Metropolitans when there's a Metropolitan division already in the National Hockey League? So that wouldn't have made sense. I know the Sockeyes were one of the betting favorites to be named the Seattle hockey team. Sockeyes, a version of a salmon up there in Seattle in the Pacific Northwest, but they go with the Kraken. And I'll tell you what, even though the Kraken is a weird name, they are going to look really stinking cool. The first impression of the Kraken is so much better than the Vegas Golden Knights.
You think so, huh?
Oh, so much better. The Vegas Golden Knights look like they created their jerseys on EA Sports and the logo. And the fact that they went with Vegas and not Las Vegas, I mean, it's taken a while to get used to it being the Vegas Golden Knights with those jerseys. And I don't know. The color scheme is a little weird. It's black, gray, and gold. But the Kraken with the logo, with the S, it's paying homage to their old hockey logos back in the day with the S being the essential logo. And then they have this secondary logo, which is an anchor because of the sea, because of a boat. But within the anchor, they have the Space Needle within it as well. It's intertwined. So I feel like the Kraken hit a home run yesterday.
I like it. I mean, if nothing else, it's unique and they will stand out. And every, you know, they won't be able to be mistaken for which team that is, if anything else. So I think that in that sense, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, to listen to the fans, I don't think it's always necessarily a bad thing when it comes to things like this. You know, personnel moves is another topic. But if you're talking about aesthetic stuff and team names and things the fans
colors
and the fans really care about and the merchandise they're going to buy, you might as well take as much input as you can, I would say.
I mean, so I believe they said this yesterday, they had over 100,000 votes for a team name over the last, what, year? Whatever that time period has been. They had a ton of input from people in Seattle. And they've had a huge following already of people wanting to get season tickets up there, whether it's full season, half season, mini game plans, whatever. I mean, it's going to be a monster hit in Seattle. And I have a feeling, I was texting someone that I know up there in that area yesterday, and that area instantly fell in love with that team yesterday.
Cool. That's good. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
And and especially for a franchise, you know, or an expansion franchise, to go ahead and just do something like that to ingrain themselves in the community with the fan base so early on, I don't see how it can be seen as anything as positive.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Seattle Kraken hitting a home run yesterday with the announcement of their team name and their jerseys, which looks slick, by the way. I mean, the jerseys look good. The logos look good. I mean, the hype video that they put out there on Twitter yesterday was...
That was well done, for sure.
Sick. I mean...
The jerseys do look cool. You know, they have almost a little bit of a Milwaukee Admirals kind of color scheme feel to them. Elijah Campbell brought that up, and I was like, you know what? I think you're kind of right.
If you replace the icy blue, which is what they're calling it, with baby blue, then yeah, it looks pretty similar to the Admirals, especially with the anchor, because the anchor is one of the Admirals' secondary logos. Speaking of team names, how about the Washington Redskins becoming the Washington Football Team? And essentially, I guess, indefinitely going with the Washington football team instead of the Washington Redskins. Temporary name, obviously. I will say WFT doesn't really roll off the tongue like WTF.
Fair.
We'll see WFT as the on the little score bugs on ESPN or Fox,
as
CBS.
The abbreviation there. Yeah, just straight Washington football team.
They've replaced Redskins on their jerseys with Washington. They've replaced the logo on their helmets with numbers. So they are going with a complete vanilla look temporarily, and I think this is for the 2020 season, and they're going to continue to go through this process of finding a new name, whether it's the Red Tails or the Warriors or what have you.
I wonder why that is. Maybe he just couldn't find something that he liked. Is he going to find something else, Dan Snyder, in a year that he likes better?
I don't know. I don't know, but I will say this is that Dan Snyder, as kooky as he is, was probably caught off guard 3 weeks ago when all the sponsors started voicing their opinion. And at that point, he had no choice. I mean, if your main sponsors were going to be backing out because of your team name, you're going to change it, especially when they came out with a release around July 4th and they were like, yeah, we're now contemplating different names. It's like, okay, there's no going back from here. But it is your franchise's identity is your team name. You don't decide that overnight. I mean, a lot of thought has to be put into it for that franchise. Ron Rivera, head coach, I think is going to be a big part of that. Hopefully he's a bigger part of that than Dan Snyder, because I don't think anyone can trust Dan Snyder with any decision right now. So they're taking their time with it. Good on them for doing that. The Washington football team, the WFTs for the 2020 season. And they're selling merchandise on Fanatics with the Washington football team.
Washington football team on it, huh?
Jerseys with Washington on it instead of Redskins. So
yeah, I don't know. Hopefully this extra season they can do some more focus studies or some type of something to get a better feel on what the fans want and what everybody would work out as best, I guess.
And I do wonder if this played a part in it, but there was somebody in Florida a few weeks ago that trademarked all the possible names for the Washington football team. So I wonder if that had anything to do with them having to put it off longer than they wanted. Plus, don't you, in the NFL, don't you have to submit your new jerseys like 1 or 2 years in advance?
I believe that.
Something stupid like that?
I believe that could be correct, yes.
Right. Like the Titans had to submit their jerseys
at least a year beforehand.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe the NFL isn't going to let them, you know, change their uniforms and change their team name that far or this close
quickly
to the season.
And plus, maybe in this environment with everything going on, it's like, all right, we get it, but now's just not the right time for us to be putting resources into this kind of thing, maybe.
Especially after the story from the Washington Post last week.
Yeah, that's true. We have to worry about maybe some type of internal investigation within Washington right now.
And that is a much bigger deal
than
what their team name is.
Definitely, definitely. And then, you know, just with the resources with them trying to figure out the NFLPA and the COVID testing and the training camp, and that internal investigation, perhaps there's probably just a lot going on. And they're like, okay, well, if there's anything that we can put back a year, maybe this is it.
Yep. So the Washington football team for the 2020 season, I'm glad it's not the Seattle hockey team once they start in 21-22 in the National Hockey League. Coming up next, the Preds did have another scrimmage yesterday, and we will get a full breakdown of said scrimmage from Adam Vingan of The Athletic. He's going to join us next here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth in studio with you this morning. Yesterday afternoon, the Preds had yet another scrimmage over at Bridgestone Arena with Team White getting retribution from the day prior. beating Team Gold 5-3 after Team Gold won 4-1 on Wednesday. Sarcasm voice there. We bring in Adam Vingan of The Athletic with us here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam, how are we doing this morning?
Good, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. So yesterday, Team White getting the victory. Victor Arvidsson scoring a couple goals for Team Gold. Matt Duchene and Mikhail Granlund score. So the second line of Turris, Duchene, and Granlund continuing to be productive in these back-to-back scrimmages. What was maybe your main takeaway from yesterday's second half of these two scrimmages?
Well, I certainly think it is the production of the quote-unquote second line of Kyle Turris, Matt Duchene, and Mikhail Granlund. Kyle Turris scored twice in the first scrimmage, and that line continued to be effective yesterday. Now, of course, there is the obvious caveat that we're talking about practice here. Not a game.
Practice?
We're talking about practice. But, yes. Anyway, I like how they have looked, and I think that is a good sign, just because we have seen in the past few seasons what happens when the Predators are a one-line team in the postseason. We saw it in the Winnipeg series 2 years ago. We saw it last year against the Dallas Stars. So if that Duchene line can be effective and support the Johansson line in the top six, that does speak well to the Predators' chances in the postseason.
And when Peter Laviolette and even John Hines tried Kyle Turris on the wing in the regular season, it kind of felt like a square peg in a round hole. But John Hines, after practice yesterday, or after the scrimmage, I should say, I mean, he made it sound like that he likes the versatility of Kyle Turris and that he's seemingly fitting in well on the wing.
Yeah, one thing that John Hines said a couple of days ago is that Kyle Turris throughout his career has been a high percentage shooter, which is true. If you look at his career shooting percentage numbers, I believe his overall career shooting percentage number is around 11%, maybe a hair below, which is a solid number. And Kyle Turris has flirted with 30 goals in the NHL during his career. So certainly a player who knows how to put the puck in the back of the net. We haven't seen a ton of that since he's been here for the past couple of years. But certainly putting him on the wing with a player in Matt Duchene that can get him the puck as well as Mikhail Granlund. Another thing that John Hines pointed out about the line in general is that all three can take faceoffs, which is certainly helpful, and all three have experience playing center. So I think that speaks to their intelligence level with and without the puck. But with Kyle Turris specifically, if they can find a way to unlock him, so to speak, and allow him to score the way he has in these practices, I think that'll be a good sign.
Adam Vingan of The Athletic with us here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Let's focus for a moment on the top line, the Jofa line. Victor Arvidsson scoring a pair of goals yesterday. By all accounts on Twitter, they were two nice goals from feeds from Philip Forsberg. What did you see from that top line yesterday that you may not have seen in Wednesday's scrimmage?
Well, certainly it seemed like the magic was back a little bit. At one point, I think Philip Forsberg set up Victor Arvidsson with a no-look between the legs pass in front of the net. And we know how dynamic that line can be. So to see them kind of getting back to their old ways a little bit was certainly encouraging. Again, caveat, practice. But I like what I've seen from them, especially since they haven't been together that much during the regular season. But, you know, for all of the assessments that I've made so far in camp, I'm going to sort of hold on to them until we see them play that exhibition game next week against the Dallas Stars, because I think in an actual game situation against another team, I think we'll be able to tell more than we've been able to during these practices.
How would you grade the performances individually for UC Saros and Pekkarinen in the two scrimmages?
I think UC Saros overall has been much sharper than Pekkarinen. I know it's easy to look at the goals against numbers in these scrimmages and make a decision based on that, but I do believe overall in these two games that they've played that UC Saros has been the better goaltender. He's faced a lot more shots. He's made, I think, some high-quality saves. You know, Pekkarinen had a rough first period of the first scrimmage. I think he allowed 4 goals on 7 shots, and I think he's been much sharper since then. But I just think the overall body of work, I think it favors UC Saros so far.
So Monday on Preds Insiders, I mean, we were basically both in agreement that UC Saros has or had the edge at the start of camp. Do you feel even more strongly now that if you were John Hines, you would start UC Saros in game one against Arizona?
I think so. I mean, it's hard to truly evaluate them based on practice necessarily, but from what I've seen, I'm more confident in having UC Saros in net for game one than Pecorino at this moment.
Adam Vingan of The Athletic with us here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam, do you have a feeling before Sunday? Sunday is the day that the Preds are supposed to travel to Edmonton to get ready for the return to play. Do you feel like after practice tomorrow, we're going to get a good sense of which players they're going to take with them to Edmonton?
Well, I think we'll have to, just because they're going to have to cut their roster before they leave. They're only allowed a maximum of 31 players in the bubble, and they have 35 players in camp. So they will have to remove 4 of them. So I do believe we'll have a pretty clear indication based on practice tomorrow who will be going and who won't. John Hines said that after practice tomorrow, they'll finalize the roster before they depart Sunday morning for Evan.
So if you look at the forwards, it kind of seems like the top 4 lines, maybe not quite set in stone, but, I mean, John Hines hasn't wavered from the top 4 lines with Joffalein, Turris, Duchesne, Granlund, Grimaldi, Bonino, and Smith, and then Yarncroke, Sissons, and Watson, perhaps the top 2 reserves at forward being Colin Blackwell and Yakov Trenin. When you look at the forwards, is there a wild card beyond those 14 that you feel like could end up seeing some action up in Edmonton?
Yeah, that's a good question. I agree that Yakov Trenin and Colin Blackwell are probably the first 2 reserves off the bench, so to speak, forward-wise. I think Rem Pitlick and Ellie Tolvanen, are certainly in that discussion. And one player who, you know, not as many Predators fans are aware of, who I think has had a really solid camp, is Michael McCarron, who was a trade deadline, or he wasn't a trade deadline acquisition, but he was a trade acquisition during the season from Montreal. You know, spent the entire season, I think, in the American League. Definitely when he was traded to the Predators, went right to the Milwaukee Admirals. You know, he's the biggest skater on the ice. I think he's 6'6", at least, might be 6'7". I've really been impressed with him. And we know that, physicality is an important part of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So I think McCarron, who has, I think, 60 or 70 games of NHL experience with the Montreal Canadiens, certainly, I could see him finding a way into the lineup potentially if it called for it.
Last thing for you, Adam. I know it can be tougher to get a gauge on this, a lot tougher, without actually being in the locker room for media availabilities and the fact that all of them are being done on Zoom right now. But what's the vibe that you're getting from this Nashville Predators team, maybe in comparison to what you were witnessing pre-COVID?
I certainly think they're a confident group, and I've said this many times on this station. You know, I talked about it with Jared a couple of days ago when I was on with him, and I think we talked about it on Insiders as well. But I believe that this team is in a better situation entering the postseason than they would have been under normal circumstances. I just think this team refreshed, they seem refocused. I think it could be a blessing in disguise for them to have this break. Personally, I feel like their chances are better of winning a round or two in the postseason than they would have been if everything would have gone off without a hitch.
Adam Vingan covers the Nashville Predators for The Athletic. Adam, thank you as always for your time, and have a good weekend.
All right, Ryan, thank you.
All right, that's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. Wednesday night's Preds Insiders, I put out a poll question that is essentially what Adam Vingan was just talking about there. And that poll question was, how do you feel about the Predators' chances of making a long playoff run for this format compared to where they would have been back in the spring Do you feel better? Do you feel the same? Or do you feel worse? We'll address that on the other side, what those poll results were on Twitter and where I fall in that discussion. That's all coming up next on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Ryan Porth, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You can stream 102.5 The Game anywhere. Download the Game National app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 102.5 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. And starting Monday, you'll be able to do all of those things with a live morning show once again on these airwaves. Morning Drive returning Monday, July 27th. That is this upcoming Monday from 6 to 10 a.m. That was our special programming announcement earlier in the show. You'll hear some familiar faces. You won't hear faces. You'll hear voices. You'll hear some familiar voices starting Monday morning. Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad. Once again, helping us out in the mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. Should be a lot of fun having some live and local talk on the Preds and Titans and football, the Stanley Cup playoffs, baseball, NBA. Everything is happening all at once, and you'll get a live component of that discussion from 6 to 10 a.m. on weekdays, once again, starting on Monday. Now, Wednesday night, I ran a poll question on my Twitter account, at PorthGame, which was asking, how do you feel about the Preds' chances of making noise going into the new format compared to how you would have felt going into the playoffs back in the spring? And remember, in the 1920 regular season, the Preds were so up and down. They were such a roller coaster. They would win two, lose two. They would win one, lose two, win two, lose one. There was essentially zero consistency, and you can date that back into the middle of the 18-19 regular season as well when all of that started. But for this Preds team, I hear Adam and what he said there last segment about how this team, you can certainly make a great case that they would have benefited from the break, that this is a fresh start for them, that mentally and physically they will benefit from the last 4.5 months of essentially it being an offseason and a total reset for this team. But every team in some way is going to benefit from this break.
And they're all saying that exact same thing.
Right. I mean, just look at two division opponents for the Nashville Predators. The St. Louis Blues, when they started the playoffs back in April, would not have had Vladimir Tarasenko. They just wouldn't have. He was still recovering from shoulder surgery. It looked like maybe round two or round three of the playoffs if the Blues were to make it that far, Tarasenko would have been available, but who knows what kind of player they would have been getting at that time. He's now fully healthy. The Colorado Avalanche, Mikko Rantanen, Remax Rantanen, as Jared has called him in the past. Mikko Rantanen, one of the top players in the game, he was banged up. He was hurt. He was going to be out for a while. Now he's fully fresh for this return to play. You can use Victor Arvidsson as an example as well. He was never fully healthy from about Thanksgiving on after he took that cross check to the back from Robert Bortuzzo. So everyone, you would think, in the National Hockey League is going to feel fresh like they do at the start of almost every regular season in October.
Which should make this an interesting playoff dynamic just in that case on its own.
You add the wide open brand of hockey that you see in October with the intensity of playoff hockey. I mean, these games are going to be wacky, and it's going to be amazing because they start at 11 a.m. and they're going to end at midnight. So when you think of the question for the Nashville Predators, do you feel better, do you feel the same, or do you feel worse now going into this format than you would have back in the spring? Adam feels better, and he's been vocal about that this week, that he feels better about this team going into this format. Again, I think you can say that a lot about a lot of NHL teams, and I'll harken back on this. I said this Wednesday night. I'll say it again. I feel the same about this team because simply I don't know what to expect. We haven't known what to expect dating back into well into the 18-19 regular season. The example I brought up Wednesday night was there was a Tuesday night at home against the Washington Capitals. They came back from a road trip, and they took the Capitals, the defending champs, behind the woodshed 7-2. Victor Arvidsson scored a hat trick, the building that night was electric. Again, they win 7-2. You're feeling good. Two nights later, they're hosting the Winnipeg Jets. Huge game in the Central Division. And they come out absolutely flat, and they lose 5-1. And for me, that was kind of the start of the not knowing what to expect out of this bunch, out of this Predators team. Back then under Peter Laviolette, and you could say the same a lot about under John Hines in those, 28 games that he had with the team before the COVID pause. I mean, you can even bring up the end of last regular season in 18-19, where they weren't backing into the playoffs, but I mean, they had Vancouver at home and they had Chicago at home, two teams that weren't making the playoffs. All they had to do was win those two games, and they win them in dramatic fashion. They win the Central Division, and it was such a tease because when they faced Dallas in the first round, it was very evident that Dallas was the better team in that series. I mean, even though the Preds led 2-1 in the series at one point, I mean, you knew Dallas was going to come back in Game 4. They came back with a vengeance in Games 4 and 5 and then won Game 6 in overtime. And the Preds get upset by the Dallas Stars. So this topsy-turvy nature of the Nashville Predators lends me to thinking that I feel the same about this Nashville Predators team going into this format, even though you can make cases that Ryan Johansson, maybe mentally more than physically, is going to benefit from this break. Victor Arvidsson, maybe physically more than mentally, is going to benefit from these last four and a half months of just being able to hit the reset button physically. You can make that case about Pekka Rinne, even though he wasn't necessarily strong in the last two scrimmages, the last 2 days. But you can make that case about a lot of teams in the National Hockey League and a lot of players. So for me, I feel the same about this team than I would have back in March.
I tend to agree. It's hard to disagree with what you're saying there with those points. Up and down, I mean, inconsistency has been the hot word for this team for, it feels like, two seasons or so.
Season and a half, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably fair. And so, I don't know. I think a lot of that, the same or feel the same, is a lot to do with the unknown and goal, right? Is the break going to do Saros well? Because he was playing really well before the break. Like, it would have been ideal for him not to have the pause. Pekka, you would think the pause would do him well, but at his age, when you don't play for this long, I'm afraid you gather a little bit more rust than you do rest at this point.
Yep.
So I'm a little bit worried about that. And with the unknown and goal, I think that's a big thing with it. And the goalie in a 5-game series, the more and more I've been thinking about it, is just going to be huge. In a 7-game series, you can maybe overcome a bad night or two from a goalie. But in a 5-game series, especially if it's game one, and you're already down because he's given up 3 softies in the first period, then, I mean, you're in trouble, and the coaches are panicking, and they don't know if they're going to pull him. And it's just it's just tricky.
Well, and think of how important Game 1 has been
to
this Nashville Predators franchise over the years.
That's true.
I want to say it's the last 12 playoff series the Preds have played in, the Game 1 winner has won the series.
Yeah, I mean, on their cup run, I mean, they were great every game one.
Except
for Pittsburgh.
In Pittsburgh,
but
they lost game one, and they lost that series.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last time a game one winner in a playoff series for that the Predators were involved in that didn't go their way was the fact that they won game one in Chicago in 2010 and lost that series. Every other series the Preds have played in since then, the game one winner has gone on to win the series.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, now that it's a best of five,
it just ramps up even more.
I went back and looked at the MLB divisional series, and I don't know if you can really take this into account and compare it to the National Hockey League, but the MLB divisional series, as we all know, is a best of five. And every year, it does feel like when a team is going into the playoffs hot and they win game one, the team that loses
over
game one is on their heels. And I bring up the Colorado Rockies as an example of that back in 07 when the Rockies won like 22 or 25 the end of regular season. They win the wild card game. They win game one in Philly, and then they end up sweeping the Philadelphia Phillies, who were the number one seed in the National League in that postseason. And it all started with game one. Once the Phillies were on their heels, I mean, the Rockies were feeling confident, and it was over, essentially. So the game one winner, historically, in the MLB Divisional Series, wins the series 70% of the time. That number in the NHL with best-of-seven series is 66% of the time. So not that big of a difference, but it does go to show you that game one, the winner of game one, goes on to win more best-of-five series in Major League Baseball than the game one winner does in game seven or in a best-of-seven series in the National Hockey League.
Well, it should make for an interesting start of the return-to-play playoff, if nothing else.
And I am stoked.
It'll be fun.
Hockey fan right now has to be so freaking stoked for next weekend.
Just for that, yeah, for that first Saturday to just flip that on and just watch for a while.
11 a.m.
Just to see what it's like of all day. And then the next day the Preds start, so
you start
fun.
With kegs and eggs at 11 a.m., and then you go basically 13 hours of hockey. It's going to feel like March Madness.
It'll be great.
It's going to be so much fun starting next week. And next Thursday, the exhibition game, the Preds facing the Dallas Stars. Pre-game at 2, puck drop at 3. You will be able to hear that game right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That's it for the rundown. Forever. It's been fun the last few months from 9 to 10 a.m. to bring an extra hour of live coverage. But once again, starting Monday, you will have Morning Drive back from 6 to 10 a.m. with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad on Monday. Can't wait for that. Hope everyone has a great weekend. Coming up next, yes, sound the alarm. Love it. Coming up next, it is Darren Donnegan Chase right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.